What's going on, everybody? It's Slay Diddy, a.k.a. Professor Slay, a.k.a. Mr. WGXC. And you are listening to WGXC Acre 90.7 FM and WGXC.org. Listen in, y'all.
Tuned into All Together Now, WGXC's regional look at the news from Hudson Valley and the Capital Region, from the Catskills to the Berkshires and beyond. I'm Tom Rowe, and today you'll hear all sorts of local news updates, weather, interviews, and more, plus community events and the song of the day on All Together Now.
This is the news. This is the network. Network. This is the news. This is the news. This is the news. This is the network, network.
On air, in air, waves controlled. On air, in air, channel connection. And the moon turns to blood.
WGXC underwriting support is provided by Mid-Hudson Cable, serving Columbia, Greene, and Southern Albany counties with digital cable, high-speed internet, and cable phone services for homes and businesses since 1971. Mid-Hudson Cable. All the right connections on the web at mhcable.com.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Arthur and Karen of Hoover, Alabama. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about Creative Community Radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You, too, can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate and designating an amount of your choosing. Thank you for your support.
From the WGXC Newsroom, this is the WGXC Daily News. I'm Philip Grant. Nick Reisman is reporting for State of Politics. Members of the State Assembly and Senate want to stay in session and continue forward with the post-budget season, even if it means in video form. Good government advocate Susan Lerner also supports the continuation of the session using video conferencing technology. Lerner said, and I quote, "Democracy doesn't pause, it adapts. While the governor continues to triage the COVID crisis, the legislature must take advantage of existing technologies to continue doing the people's business remotely," end quote. The legislature approved a state budget in early April. It was approved under emergency rules that allowed lawmakers to cast votes and participate remotely. If the session continues, lawmakers could take up codification of many executive orders Governor Andrew Cuomo has issued, plus tackle non-payment of rents during the crisis and making it easier to vote through absentee balloting. The session's final day is scheduled to be June 2nd. And you can read the full story at NewYorkPolitics.com. The Times Union is reporting the Daily Star, the Oneonta-based daily newspaper, announced April 13th. It's going from a 6 to 5 day publication in its print and online editions effective next week. The paper cited as the reason a substantial drop in advertising sales revenue stemming from business shutdowns resulting from the coronavirus pandemic. Editor Danelli Cazola said, and I quote, "I believe this is going to be a permanent change," end quote. The 130-year-old paper covers rural Otsego, Delaware, Chenango, and Schoharie counties. It will now publish on Tuesday through Saturday. It has been on a Monday through Saturday schedule. Publisher Ed Scheller said, and I quote, "The Daily Star is not going anywhere," end quote, adding no further reductions are planned. The Daily Star is part of Community Newspaper Holdings, Incorporated, which owns several other newspapers in New York, including those in Niagara Falls and Plattsburgh. And you can read this full story in the Times Union. NBC is reporting a study commissioned by the website alcohol.org of 3,000 people nationwide has found that drinking on the job is becoming more of a normality as Americans are shifting to a work-from-home lifestyle during the coronavirus emergency. The study breaks down the percentage of people in each state who have opted to drink alcoholic beverages while working remotely. In New York, 38% of those surveyed reported drinking while working. A Nielsen study found that alcohol sales increased 55% the week of March 21st, as many people were following shelter-in-place orders. Drizzly, an alcohol delivery app, saw a massive increase in sales in the last week of March, according to Yahoo Finance. Experts are warning that overindulgence may not mix with coronavirus. According to the Johns Hopkins Bloomberg School of Public Health, repeated alcohol use could lead to a weakened immune system and increased susceptibility to pneumonia. Those who are immunocompromised are at greater risk for developing serious complications related to COVID-19. And you can read the full story at NBCNewYork.com. And that wraps up the WGXC Daily News. For local weather reports, public meetings, community information, and COVID-19 updates, visit our website at WGXC.org. From the WGXC Newsroom, I'm Philip Grant. Have a good day and a pleasant tomorrow.
Hello and welcome to the Better Weather. Today is Thursday. That's right, Thursday. I try to avoid superfluous information or statistics, but as things are now, what day it is has started to slip people's minds. So you're going to start getting a daily reminder. Anyone venturing out for supplies or exercise today would do well to wait out the morning. Starting in the mid to low 30s, the dusting of snow on the ground will melt as the day warms and light rains enter the area this afternoon. Highs reach 47 around 3 p.m. Overnight, rain leaves the area and temperatures reach the low 30s again near dawn tomorrow, which warms up a little more, reaching almost 50 by 3 p.m. Rain will begin in the afternoon on Friday and continue into Saturday morning. Saturday afternoon and Sunday morning are looking very nice to get outside. Watch out, rain rolls in on Sunday afternoon. Pollen levels are medium today and tomorrow. You get a break on Saturday. The next high tides will be at 10:54 a.m. and at 11:36 p.m. The next low tides will be at 5:47 p.m. and tomorrow at 6:06 a.m. Water temperature will be 48 degrees. Our mountain-adjusted sunset today will be at 7:18 p.m. and sunrise tomorrow will be at 6:12 a.m. Looking way up, we see researchers on Hawaii's Mauna Kea have detected the most energetic wind from any quasar ever measured. This outflow, which is traveling at nearly 13% the speed of light, carries enough energy to dramatically impact star formation across the entire galaxy. The extragalactic tempest lay hidden in plain sight for 15 years before being unveiled by innovative computer modeling and new data from the International Gemini Observatory. Solar wind speed is currently 380 kilometers per second at 1.8 protons per milliliter. The 24-hour predicted KP index is 2. Quiet. There have been 11 days since the last sunspot, and this has been the Better Weather, brought to you by the Catskill Makers Syndicate.
From the WGXC Newsroom, this is the WGXC News Update. I'm Philip Grant. Amelia Teasdale is reporting for the Columbia paper. The Ichabod Crane Board of Education met remotely using a video conferencing platform Tuesday, April 7th. All members except Vice President John Antelec attended the meeting along with school administrators and two student board representatives. The public was invited to watch and participate as well. District Business Manager Michael Brennan presented the district's proposed $42 million budget for the 2020-21 school year. The spending plan falls within the state's mandated tax cap and includes approximately $15 million in state aid. There are currently no plans to make any staff cuts. Brennan said the district could lose about $214,000 in state support, but if that happens, the district would cover the loss with money from the district's reserve funds or fund balance. Brennan said the potential reduction was, and I quote, not so bad, end quote, saying other districts would be hurt much more. Board President Matthew Nelson said the board numbers were, and I quote, more positive, end quote, than he expected in light of what is going on in the world. The annual budget vote and board election, which normally takes place in May, will happen in June this year. The board will meet remotely again on April 21st to vote on the Questar 3 BOCES administrative budget. And you can read the full story in the Columbia paper. Larry Rulison is reporting for the Times Union. A new Siena College Research Institute survey of upstate business leaders released April 16th found that 63% expect the state's economy will not rebound to pre-COVID-19 levels for at least another 6 months. Among business leaders in the capital region, 87% expect they will not achieve their 2020 revenue projections when the year is over. 83% of capital region business leaders also expect to fall short of profit expectations this year. The survey was sponsored by the Business Council of New York State. Heather Brissetti, CEO of the Business Council, said in a statement, and I quote, "The result of this poll showed what many expected. Businesses are hurting, especially smaller businesses and those in sectors whose operations have been most impacted by the reasonable state-imposed restrictions," end quote. The majority of Capital Region business leaders reported they had not closed locations or laid off employees during the pandemic, despite the loss of revenue. On the positive side, Don Levy, the director of the Siena College Research Institute, said virtually everyone interviewed expect their own business to survive the crisis. You can read the full story in the Times Union. MidHudsonNews.com is reporting the Democrat members of the Dutchess County Legislature are protesting the decision made by Chairman Greg Pulver to cancel the April full board and committee meetings. The Democrats hold 8 of the legislature's 25 seats. Pulver called off the April assemblies, citing the call for safe social distancing and the need to evaluate the fiscal condition of the county before making additional expenditures related to COVID-19. The Democrat caucus released a statement April 16th, arguing the legislature is required to meet. Legislator Giancarlo Laveras said, and I quote, "There seems to be an inaccurate and disturbing assumption that the legislature is disposable in challenging times," end quote. The Democrats were looking to discuss the possibility of a rent and mortgage moratorium, the expansion of emergency shelter for residents escaping home violence, and the immediate exploration of using local county funds as a stopgap for small businesses and more. Formal resolutions proposed by Democrats for the April meeting included expansion of the county's COVID-19 hotline hours, development of public hand-washing stations, as well as expanded support for the nonprofit groups providing emergency groceries to residents in need. Pulver was unapologetic. In response, he said, and I quote, "Every day we are losing 1,000 New Yorkers. I won't engage in a back and forth with my colleagues through the media nor engage in politics," end quote. He said the legislature will hold remote meetings on May 7th and May 11th. He said, and I quote, "I encourage all my colleagues to join me in helping those in our community who are in need. I know we will get through this, and the only way to do it is together," end quote. Read the full story at MidHudson News. And that wraps up the WGXC News Update. For local weather reports, public meetings, community information, and COVID-19 updates, visit our website at WGXC.org. From the WGXC Newsroom, I'm Philip Grant. Have a good day and a pleasant tomorrow.
What's up, y'all? This is Sean Ardwin on WGXC Radio, hands-on radio, all the way from Louisiana. I'm coming to you in your ear grease, baby. Lock it in.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Sarah and Sam of New York, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate and designating an amount of your choosing. Thank you for your support.
Welcome, radio listeners. You're listening to Bound by Books Youth Radio on WGXE 90.7 FM, Acre, Catskill, and Hudson, listener-supported radio for open ears. I'm Emily. I'm the director of the Hudson Area Library, and I'm from Hudson.
I'm Amelia. I'm a student at Hudson High School, and I'm also from Hudson.
I'm Mishuda Sultana. I'm 18, and I'm also from Hudson High School.
I'm Vahim. I'm 15, and I'm also from Hudson.
I am Lena. I am a student of MC Smith.
Hi, my name is AJ. I go to school at Leibri. Well, did go to school at Leibri, and I live in Elizaville.
And we're here every week talking about books.
Yay.
Books we love, books we hate.
Books we hate.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I'm sorry, Vahim. I've been doing both parts for such a long time.
Vahim loves to talk about books.
That's fine. I forgot.
So we talk about books every week, and sometimes we talk about books we're reading for school, and sometimes we talk about books that we're reading for fun, and sometimes we talk about books that we're writing. But before we jump into talking about books, I also wanted to welcome back Mishuda and Vahim, because we haven't had them on the show for so long. We've missed them. We're glad you're back, even if it's because school's out and everything's canceled, except for Bound by Books, apparently.
Yeah, Bound by Books will never get canceled.
Bound by Books forever.
Yeah.
Yay.
Yay. Well, we're glad you're here. But I think we're going to start with AJ has a special book that she wanted to talk about.
So I've been writing a book, and I never, ever, 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 ever have agreed on a title. So far, my newest title is What? I actually don't have a blur because I'm just typing this out. Do you mind if I read a little bit of chapter one?
Sure.
Okay, so, on your marks, get set, go, the coach yelled. Nico sped off, taking the lead. If this is coach's idea of warming up for the big game, I'm a monkey's uncle, he thought, looking over his shoulder at his teammates lagging behind. She could do better than this. He sped around the field once, twice, three times, four. Nico was at full speed, and it looked like he was not going to stop. Then, ow! Nico found himself on the ground, screaming like he had never screamed before. He looked at his knee. It was swelling. He was in the most pain that he had ever experienced in his entire life.
And that was a little excerpt from chapter one.
Cool. Awesome. That's a fun start to a book.
I am confused, like, about what's going on.
He's practicing for football.
Oh. Mm.
What inspired you to write this story?
So this is actually funny. So I had an ELA prompt. It was this picture of a bunch of people getting ready to run. And then I thought, hey, this would make a really good book. And it turned out to be this. Yeah, I wrote
okay,
it all.
Okay, I missed that part. I didn't realize you wrote this.
And it turned out to be a sci-fi adventure story. Whoa. And I want to write more books like this in the series. And so I have a plan for a book. I don't know the name yet, but it's going to be about five sisters. One died of something, and that one is a ghost that meets up with the four other sisters on their 10th birthday because they're all born on the same day. And that's as far as I got for the blueprint for that one.
Are they birth sisters or adopted sisters if they all have the same birthday? Is it just by chance? Oh, wow. So the mom had five kids at the same time?
Quintuplets.
That's a lot.
Ouch! Poor I'm imagining mom. How big it is.
Yeah, no, that would have been bad. I've actually finished my short story unit, so I finished writing some things too. I had to write two stories for this short story unit, and my ELA teacher, ELA, it's creative writing. I don't know why I called it ELA. My creative writing teacher actually like just gave me this whole week off and I have nothing to do. And I'm almost sad because she's my favorite teacher. I'm like, why couldn't one of the other ones give me a whole week off so I have more time to do what you want to do? We read a ton of Ray Bradbury short stories.
Did you have a favorite of the short stories you read?
My favorite of the Ray Bradbury ones we read, because we read some other ones, but the ones by Bradbury were the ones that stuck out in my head the most. And my favorite was probably, he wrote a short story called something like, Think Soft Rains Will Come or something like that. Something, I might be getting the title wrong. About a house that is living, like, basically in this town. The house is automated. It does everything for the people who live in it. It cooks the people's food. It helps them with everything. It tells the time. This house is like basically if an entire house was Alexa. I have to whisper, otherwise mine will hear me and she'll turn on. Basically, the whole house is like an automated, like Siri kind of system. And as the house is going through its day, you start to realize that the house is going through all the things it usually does, but the people living in it are like long dead. Like the house exists in an atomic wasteland. The house is the only character in the story. And at the end, it ends with the house burning down with only one wall standing, and that one wall is still doing the automated things it's supposed to do, even though it's just a wall. It's like the house is like clinging onto life, and I really liked the way they personified the home, the structure in like that whole wasteland. I thought it was really cool.
Interesting.
Yeah, I like that one. It's one of the few ones that I've read by him. But every story I've read by him I've loved, so have to read some more. How about Mashuda? Have you been reading anything recently?
Yeah, like Amelia said, about like for creative writing, Miss Neer assigns like a lot of very great. What's his name again, Amelia?
Ray Bradbury.
Okay.
Yeah, I forgot you were in my class too for a second.
Yeah, I think I'm in the first section, and you're like I think in the afternoon.
Yeah, I'm in the later half of the day.
Yeah. So I think his one of his stories, Sleep, and I like actually like the description he uses like in his story. Mm-hmm. But like I wanted to share like a poem I found online.
Great.
It's about coronavirus, so it's by Laura Kelly Fanucci. When this is over, may we never again take for granted a handshake with a stranger, full shelves at the store, conversations with neighbors, a crowded theater, Friday night out, the taste of communion, a routine checkup, the school rush each morning, coffee with a friend, the stadium roaring, each deep breath, a boring Tuesday, life itself. When this ends, may we find that we have become more like the people we were called to be, we hope to be, and may we stay that way better for each other because of the worst. Yeah, it was... I don't know, it just spoke to me. I mean, we always take things granted. Like before the pandemic, we were like free. We could go to any restaurant or anything. We could just go outside and do like what we want to do. But now we are all like stuck in home and we have like limited option we could do. And so like basically as a senior, I was like very excited for like a lot of things. And because of that pandemic, like everything is canceled. even for my sociology, like breaking social norm project, you know, I couldn't do anything. I could just break a social norm by staying, you know, at home. I was thinking like I could do so many things because like that's breaking a rule and, you know, just it's fun, but I couldn't. A lot of people in my class, like they could only do like sitting on the dining table and like, I don't know, record your family like doing, being silly.
Is there anything you all are missing the most right now?
I just miss seeing my friends.
Well, I do miss seeing my friends, but what is actually weird is I actually miss the school part, but not only the school part. I think that I would rather actually, this is sort of weird, get in trouble in real life than get in trouble virtually because, well, at least that person's still right there instead of like far away and distant and in a, like a different house.
I miss the structure of school. Like, it's hard to motivate myself to get up at a certain time when I really don't have anywhere to be and I won't get in trouble for being late to something, but then I, like, lose my structure and my routine that's really comforting to me. Mm-hmm. I like having a period where you do this and a period where you do that, and now it's just I have to get on the computer and motivate myself and figure out what am I going to do first today.
Yeah.
Today I barely had anything to do, and that was like, and it sounds like that should be like relaxing and chill, but it's actually kind of disturbing because then, well, what did I do? What did I get up for? I can't hang out with my friends. I can't go to school. Like, what am I doing?
Yeah. So for me, it's like, I don't know. I really never had to use time management in my high school career, but now I feel like I have to push myself and, you know, do my assignment using time management on top of scholarships, everything.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like, Amelia, I don't know if you know, but I feel like our prom and graduation gonna get canceled.
I don't think prom is gonna get canceled. We had a senior meeting and they said that if anything, prom will just be held later and in the school. And I don't have a problem with having a prom in the school. That's how people used to do it, have the prom in the school gym. I don't care as long as I get to hang out with my friends. That's that last thing. I think it's really unlikely that our prom is going to get canceled.
Yeah, but it's not going to be in June because, like, according to the news and everything, they're thinking, like, push the school break until, like, May 15 or something. And I don't think it's going to be in June, maybe over the summer. That's what I heard. But
I don't know.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of unknowns.
Yeah.
How about you, Lena? Have you been missing anything in particular?
Yeah, I miss my friends because they don't pick up on my calls. And also one of them I can't talk to because she doesn't have a phone and I can't chat with her on Discord. I miss being able to go to Keely's house because the closest for me to being inside of Keely's house is being on her porch and being able to talk to her. And now I feel scared because my sister told me, which may or may not be true, I don't know, that if you're in a group of 8 or more, you'll get arrested if someone calls.
You won't get arrested, but you will get broken up. They won't arrest you. In some places, yes, they will arrest you if you host like a party or something and clearly like disrespect the rules. But like,
I think you will get a fine, right? Right
now. Yeah, so some places are giving out fines. Some places, but that's pretty extreme to get arrested just for being in a group of 8.
Yeah,
I've been trying to make an effort to like, you know, FaceTime and talk to my friends a lot. I've been playing a ton of Minecraft with my friend. It's been wild. But I actually, yesterday, I was painting rocks for a project for one of my dance studio. We're basically doing this thing where we all paint rocks and leave them outside the dance studio door so that when we eventually get to come back, we'll see all the rocks and it'll be like a nice happy thing. I painted a ton of rocks. I painted one rock for the gym and a bunch for school projects. And then I painted one for my friend. She wanted one with a peach on it, a peach rock. And I made it for her and I left it outside her porch just as like a thing for her. And that was kind of comforting because it's those little things that like we're still connected in that way.
That's nice. I like the idea of having a bunch of rocks that greet you when you get to go back to the dance studio. That's sweet.
Yeah, it's going to be cool. Someone painted like Starry Night on a rock, like a miniature Starry Night. It was amazing. It was really good.
That's cool. So how about you, Fahim?
I mean, I don't miss much about like school, but I'm just like mad that there are like work that were due, and then like now I can't really like, I already did all the work and stuff, but I can't like really hand them in. They're like paperwork and stuff, so it's like no point of me working on it. Mm. It's kind of like I already did it, and then like now it's like there's no point.
Yeah, I definitely miss interacting with people in person. I've done some Zoom calls with people, which are nice. But it's also weird because we don't know the timeline of when we'll safely be able to gather, that I realize I have no idea when I'll be able to like see my parents in person. And my sister's living abroad currently, and we're not sure when she'll be able to travel to come back. So there's a lot of unknowns with that, but they're not as immediate because we don't really know. But hopefully sometime soon I can see them in person. That'd be nice. Anyways, thanks for sharing that poem, Ashuda.
You're welcome.
Fahim, did you have any books you wanted to talk about?
Yeah, I have a book. Like, I'm pretty sure most of you guys are familiar with it. It's called The Blind Side, the book version by Michael Lewis. I'm just going to read the back of the book. Just like, yeah. Michael Orr is one of 13 children by a mother addicted to crack. He does not know his real name, his father, his birthday, or how to read or write. He takes up football in school after a rich white evangelical family plucks him from the streets. And two great forces alter Orr, the family's love and the evolution of professional football itself, into a game where the quarterback must be protected at any cost. Our protagonist becomes the priceless package of size, speed, and agility necessary to guard the quarterback's greatest vulnerability, his blind side. So it's basically like about how football is like in real life. You have to go through obstacles to like block, to basically block for your family and stuff. He's like an offensive line, blocking for his family, both like his family and quarterback. He plays like old tackle, and like he has to block every obstacle in his way of life to achieve like accomplishments. And eventually he does. He goes to the NFL later on. So that's basically, that's like his slave life journey and everything.
That's great. I haven't actually read or seen the movie for that, but I know a little bit about the story. Is the book really good?
It's like same based as the movie, but just a little different.
Yeah. Have you seen the movie?
Yeah.
Did you read that for school?
Yeah, I had to pick like an independent book for like my ELA class and stuff. I didn't have any other choice. I just saw this book. I was like, why not?
I think, Amelia, weren't you going to read a autobiography or biography soon too for school?
Yeah. The biography isn't required for school. She kind of just gave it to us for like, you know, to read over the quarantine. Mm-hmm. I finished The Tattooist of Auschwitz, and I'm going to start that other book.
Did you do the same assignment, Mashuda?
I think I'm reading a different book, Educated.
Yeah, we had options. I chose Tattooist of Auschwitz. So you chose Educated. How was that?
I mean, Educated is very deep. It's like, I don't want to like, okay, but like, you know, the Himalaya girl that she, the girl that lived in Himalaya, she finally, you know, achieved her dream. But the cost was like, you know, she had to fight her family. And
it's about a, I think it was about a girl who lives with a very conservative, very religious, kind of crazy family. And she ends up being the first one in her family to go to college and get an education.
Yeah, I like that book a lot.
Yeah. Oh, you read it, Miss Emily?
Yeah, I thought it was great. I want to read Tattooist of Auschwitz as well, but I haven't read that one yet. So Lena, have you been reading anything during the time at home?
Yeah, and this was actually kind of assigned, and it was actually a read aloud. So technically it kind of counts, I think.
Sure.
So I had to read Thelma the Unicorn. And so it's basically about this pony who doesn't like how she looks. She wants to become a unicorn. And so she pretends to be a unicorn. She gets famous. And then in the end, she doesn't like being a unicorn. And I got a 100 out of 100 because I figured it out most of the story. And that's how I describe the story without spoiling it. And I'm thinking of starting to make a book.
Oh yeah, what's that going to be about?
It's going to be about a girl who, like, she's in a different world where, like, there are magic superpowers and stuff. And, like, there's, like, 1% of you being a normal human being, and then there's 99.9% that you're going to be magical and not a human being. So, yeah, and she's like a human. She gets bullied for that, but she's actually pretty strong. I think, like, I want to go, like, with fantasy, but, like, not something really basic, I guess. And also, like, I'm pretty sure that's the plot of most books with fantasy.
I don't know.
So, yes.
It sounds interesting.
Yeah. I will figure out the storyline.
Cool. Yeah, you'll have to report back.
Yes.
Nice. I haven't been reading quite as much recently. I don't know. I haven't been finding the time as much. But I did start a book that I'm liking so far called Ruby on the Outside by Nora Raleigh Baskin, who I think was supposed to come to the book festival this year, but I might be confusing her with somebody else. And I can read the description for you. So it's Ruby on the Outside by Nora Raleigh Baskin. 11-year-old Ruby Danes is about to start middle school, yet no one in her life other than her aunt knows her deepest, darkest secret. Her mother is in prison. Then Marguerite Tips moves into Ruby's condo complex, and the two immediately hit it off. Ruby thinks she's found her first true blue friend. Is she ready to tell Marguerite the truth? When Marguerite's family history seems to tie in too closely to the very event that put her mother in prison, Ruby fears she could lose everything, but she may learn the true meaning of friendship, honesty, and love along the way. And so far, it's very good. I don't have the audio for this one, and you all know how I love a good audiobook. But I don't think it has an audio version. But I'm making my way through, and so far it's very nice. I think it does a good job of showing Ruby and her mom's relationship. And she also has her aunt, Barbara, who she refers to as Matu, or Matu for mom number two. And so a lot of people assume that Matu is her mom because she keeps the fact that her mom's in prison a secret. So it does a good job of, like, kind of showing, you know, she loves her mom and she wants to maintain that relationship. It's really important to her, and that she doesn't quite know what her mom is in prison for and isn't sure if she wants to know because she's worried that that will complicate things. But yeah, so far a very nice book.
Ooh, sounds really interesting.
Yeah, and I'm curious. So I've just gotten to the part where she's starting to suspect that there may be a connection between her new friend, Marguerite, and something to do with her mom being in prison. Because there's a name, Tips, which is Marguerite's last name, is a name that Ruby has heard in these whispered discussions between her mom and Matu. So she knows there's some connection there, but she doesn't know what it is. And she's worried that Marguerite's going to find out her secret. And it's just a lot of pressure when you're trying to make a new friend and worried that they're going to judge you and your situation. And for something that you have no control over, too. Tough.
Yeah.
Anyway, so that's what I'm reading now. I need to find a new audiobook to listen to. Although I've been thinking of listening to a book called Rania, the Robber's Daughter, which is by Astrid Lindgren, which I've been meaning to read for about 7 or 8 years. Antonia, who was one of the early Bound by Books co-hosts, had really liked it when she was about 10, and she's, I think, in her 20s now. So it's been a while. And I just got the audiobook for that on my phone, so that might be my next listen. And Astrid Lindgren's the author who wrote Pippi Longstocking, and I love Pippi Longstocking. So fingers crossed that this will be a good one, too.
Cool.
Well, I think we're just about out of time for today.
Oh, no.
I know. It goes so fast, especially when there's six of us.
Yeah.
But we hope everyone out there listening has a good week, reads lots of good books, stays home, stays healthy, and we'll be back next week to talk about some more.
Cool.
Have a good week and happy reading.
Happy reading.
Bye.
Happy reading.
Bye.
Happy reading. Bye.
Não estremecer mais teu coração. Já nos provou não ter sustento pra suportar a erupção de uma voz incandescente como as lavas de um vulcão. Mas você.
estremece mais teu coração. Já nos provou não ter sustento pra suportar a erupção de uma voz incandescente como as lavas.
Service Daily Newscast for April the 16th, 2020. I'm Mike Clifford. There are now more than 632,000 confirmed cases in the U.S. of COVID-19. CNBC reports that's the worst outbreak in the world. At a Rose Garden press briefing, President Trump said new cases are declining in New York, which has more confirmed cases than any country outside the U.S. CNBC reports Trump said he will be discussing guidelines for reopening commerce on Thursday. He added as many as 29 states are in what he called very good shape. Some might reopen prior to May 1st, which appears to be his current target. Meantime, Maine Governor Janet Mills says she is coordinating plans with the governors of New Hampshire and Vermont to reopen the economy once it is safe to lift stay-at-home orders. But according to an infectious disease expert, a few measures must be in place to lower the chances of COVID-19 spreading quickly.
Dr. Tim Leahy at the University of Vermont Medical Center says it's most important now to test people who potentially are sick with the coronavirus. Once the curve drops and parts of the workforce go back, Leahy thinks it's crucial to do contact tracing or testing anyone who's been in contact with an infected person. But Leahy believes another strategy is equally vital.
You're also going to want to go back to some random testing strategies just to get a sense of whether the virus is or is not still circulating in the community, because that's going to inform public health measures.
Leahy thinks New England and some other states, such as California and New York, are close to being able to do contact tracing and random testing once the COVID-19 curve drops. But he says there will need to be many more workers doing testing, and most public health departments are sorely underfunded. Leahy worries there could be a surge in infections without widespread testing after state economies reopen. I'm Laura Rosbrow-Tellum reporting.
March 17th has passed, but Ohio's 2020 presidential primary is not over. Mary Sherman explains.
Because of concerns about the spread of COVID-19 and the closure of polling locations, Ohioans now can vote by mail until April 28th. Ohio Secretary of State Frank LaRose says the state already has a convenient absentee voting system, which is routinely used by about 25% of voters. But he notes time is short to request a vote-by-mail ballot for the primary.
Our postal carriers are out there working hard, and it takes time for the mail
to get things to you. So the biggest mistake would be waiting to request your absentee ballot. It's time to act, and it's really simple. It only takes you a few minutes. Whether there's a pandemic or not, your voice really matters.
Voters can print their own absentee ballot request form online at voteohio.gov or call their local county board of election and have a request sent.
This is PNS. Advocates for public banking are now pressing states to create their own banks, which could lend at lower rates and prioritize recovery of local business.
They argue that Wall Street currently takes too big a bite in fees and interest. Public Banking Institute Chair Ellen Brown says states should move their money to state entities that act like a utility whose mission is to promote the public interest.
They can direct it to the people and businesses in their local communities that actually need it. Right now, that credit power is all going to Wall Street, which is not redirecting it back into our local communities.
I'm Suzanne Potter.
The Public Banking Institute would also like Congress to empower the Postal Service to set up its own bank. The first two deaths related to the coronavirus come as Florida's prison system is seeing a spike in both staff and people serving time in prison that are testing positive COVID-19. More on the story from Tramell Gomes.
Just over a week ago, the Florida Department of Corrections said 12 staffers and no inmates had tested positive. As of Tuesday, that grew to 56 staffers and 35 inmates, with a majority of the case explosion happening at the Blackwater River Correctional Facility in Florida's Panhandle, where two individuals reportedly died. Deborah Bennett with the National Council of Incarcerated and Formerly Incarcerated Women and Girls says she thinks the number of positive tests is much worse.
I have no doubt that the numbers are drastically higher than what they're producing.
The department has not responded to our request for comment, and the News Service of Florida is reporting that facility has kept the fatality secret for nearly a week, with information coming from the local medical examiner's office.
Finally, our Eric Tegedoff reports Colorado's foundations are going all in on efforts to ensure an accurate count in the 2020 census.
And with daily life upended by the coronavirus pandemic, the call is out for creative ways to engage all Coloradans in the once-a-decade tally. Denver-based Next 50 Initiative is handing out $750,000 in grants to groups who can reach hard-to-count older adults across the state. Diana McPhail with the private foundation says previous outreach plans relied on person-to-person contact and community gatherings.
With those being taken out of the realm of possibility because of COVID, it's really important now more than ever to raise awareness and educate older adult populations on the importance of Census 2020 participation.
More than $1.5 trillion federal tax dollars each year are at stake, including hundreds of millions distributed to Colorado for programs that the state's residents rely on, including education, veterans, health care, housing, and children's programs, road construction, and more.
Thanks for starting your day with Public News Service. Please do stay safe and 6 feet apart. I'm Mike Clifford. Public News Service is member and listener supported, and we're online at publicnewsservice.org.
Hello, this is Eileen Javier from WOOC 105.3 FM, broadcasting from the Sanctuary for Independent Media. And I'm here with Dr. Lauren Adele, and she is a doctor that is specialized in trauma, PTSD, burnout, and she has worked with hospital staff, first responders affected by Parkland and 9/11. She also helped teenagers whose fathers were killed in the September 11th World Trade Center attacks. She's an expert on mental health and climate change. She has been quoted in the New York Times, the Wall Street Journal, NPR Radio, Fox Radio News Network, and CNN.com. And how are you today, Dr. Lori?
I am good. How are you, Eileen? Thank you so much for having me on your show.
Thank you for giving us this opportunity to speak with you. You have a lot of experience in trauma, and that's what we need to talk today. I want to focus on your recent book. Your recent book, The Five Gifts, Discovering Hope, Healing, and Strength When Disaster Strikes. And I would like to know a little bit more about yourself. I know that I already gave a little bit of an introduction, but I want to know a little bit more about you and also what inspired you to write this book.
Well, that's an excellent question. I was a journalist for the first 20 years of my career, and I worked as a writer-producer in hard news for CBS News for about 10 years. And in the course of processing film and video of people whose lives were shattered by these sudden violent events, natural disasters and terrorist attacks and assassination attempts, kind of the grueling fodder of daily news, I came to recognize that people who went through one of these events or experiences would need special support. They would need long-term support. And so I left CBS, and I was able to write a couple of books. And then I went back to school, to graduate school, and I began to study psychology and clinical hypnotherapy with a specialty in trauma and stress. And for the past 30 years, I've been helping individuals and groups and organizations recover emotionally from traumatic events and big events like September 11th and Hurricane Sandy, where I lost my own home. Oh. Because of Hurricane Sandy, the aftermath of a natural disaster is really horrific for people, especially those of us who are middle class and who are dependent on our insurance and on FEMA and on the banks. And, you know, we just become very vulnerable. And in the course of running a support group in the community where I lived, because of my 9/11 experience, I knew that people needed specific help for this kind of disaster. I was meditating one day, and I literally received a kind of spiritual message that these five gifts would help us get through Hurricane Sandy and any other disaster. And these five gifts are found in spiritual traditions and cultures all over the world. And they are humility, patience, empathy, forgiveness, and growth. And we need all of these five gifts because it can take several years to recover from something like this pandemic, which has traumatized, you know, billions of people literally around the world. And these five gifts will help us get through the long haul of recouping and healing and discovering something new about ourselves that we didn't know before.
Okay. Wow. So these five gifts, I know about your emotional first aid tools. Those five gifts are the essence of the emotional first aid tools, or these are separate, or they are interconnected?
Well, I think that that's a great question. I think the emotional first aid tools are designed to relieve panic and anxiety and kind of to diffuse the shock of, you know, dealing with something like the disruption of life and the fear around the disease that we're facing now, or the aftermath of an event like the Parkland shooting, where what would happen is every time there was a fire alarm drill, the sound of the bell would trigger post-traumatic stress in the teachers and the students. So these emotional first aid tools will keep panic from taking over. And they work like literally within seconds to help us calm down. But that they only work in the short term. They work very well, but it's like putting on a bandage, you know, when you've had a sprain, or a Band-Aid, you know, when you have a cut. But for mm-hmm. the deeper psychological and spiritual wound of a mass casualty, or we call these events in which many people die, they're called mass fatality events. And in something like COVID-19, where it's kind of an equal opportunity destroyer, and it kills old people, it kills young people, it kills healthy people, It kills people with pre-existing conditions. And to recover from something as massive as this, we need the five gifts for the long-term process of psychological and spiritual healing.
Okay, yes. I by listening to the five gifts, I will say that in my personal opinion, on my personal journey through this pandemic and this tragic experience, I never experienced anything like this in my life. And I'm sure everybody is on the same situation. I think I'm in the first step. I don't know if there is an order. I think they probably go together, but I'm in the fact that I'm accepting that it is what it is.
Right.
I am not so patient, and normally I'm a patient person, but suddenly I am impatient because I would like to know when this is over, when I can hug my loved ones and my people. What can you tell us of what ideas can you give us about patience? How to gather patience when there is not any news are changing every day? So there's no right. certainty. And on certain times, where can we get patience?
No. It's an excellent question, because we are a very impatient culture. And if you read the chapter, I wrote about how I don't usually get writer's block, but I had writer's block for almost a month before I could write this chapter. And I realized it's because I myself am very impatient by nature. Mm-hmm. And so having to write about patience was really a challenge for me. And I thought, I am probably the least likely person. I spoke to my daughter, and she said, "Mom, how did you write about patience?" And I said, "Yeah, it was a real challenge." I think that for us as a culture, it's a real challenge, because we are very much geared towards immediate gratification. And mm-hmm. if you don't like something, you swipe it away. And when something big and horrendous and unthinkable happens to us, we want to swipe it away. We want to make all of the hurt and fear and anger and panic, we just want to swipe it away. But you can't swipe it away. You cannot change the channel, because this is something that we have to live through individually and together. We have to go through it. And there are no shortcuts. And there's no certainty. There's no schedule for how long it's going to take. So patience is really, I call it the unbearable gift. You know, it's the gift that we need the most, and it's the gift that we want the least. I mean, nobody wants patience, right?
No.
You just want it to be over with now, and you want to know what's coming next so you can start planning your life. But, you know, the way to get patience is to really, I it's a form of prayer. You just pray and you ask God, or you ask your angels or your spirit guide, you know, please send me patience. It's a grace to be able to be patient and to accept that the hurt is lasting a lot longer than we thought it would. And the pain of isolation and the stay-at-home orders and the ramifications of those are taking a bigger toll than we realized. And patience is the gift that we need in order to stop getting angry at circumstances that are beyond our control.